Like,
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the long-awaited 190th episode of the Mod State Podcast. I don't know why that's long-awaited, but either way, we are 10 shy.
It is.
200, my friend.
Just shy. It's kind of surreal. About to hit the dual century mark.
Yeah, making good strides, though. So, well, before we get started on this one, as always, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning into the Mod State Podcast. And for those of you who have been over to the site, continue to do so. We're updating editorials, op-eds, and I think what you'll find is we'll have a greater frequency of those. They may be a little bit shorter, but still chock full of information. As always, continue listening to the podcast wherever you're listening to the podcast, and tell your friends. So, and that's how it sort of happened that we've got both listeners international and domestic.
Yeah, seriously. Hello in Ethiopia.
Yeah, Ethiopia or
Somalia. No, I'm not kidding. We had it.
I mean, maybe it's it's an IP address thing, but I'd like to say that we have reached almost all the continents, if not.
Now, what I want to know is, all right, I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say there was no VPN bouncing out of North Korea. So to the brave soul that every now and then it pops up, one or two, or who knows, they may be working for Kim Jong-un. I don't know. Either way, every now and then that pops up as a download. I'm going, good for you.
Yeah, good for you. I don't also have this sort of
still alive
moral hazard of a potential loss of life, but I mean, if
I didn't do it,
I didn't do it either. But God bless you for trying.
More power to you, homeboy.
Yikes. Yeah, if you want to shout us a comment from Pyongyang, like, feel free. I don't know how that works, but
if you want a place to crash, if you can get out of there.
Yeah, I feel like I'd have a moral obligation to do
room
something.
Room in the garage here.
Yikes.
The garage.
Anyway, moral obligation, moral hazard. Man, that seems to be.
What a segue.
Hey, look, let me tell you the truth. I go through these cycles of deleting my Facebook or deleting my social medias in some cyclical fashion. It's been Facebook for a while. I turn it off
Facebook for 6 months.
And quite frankly, if I feel the need to go onto Facebook, I'll physically log in on my Safari on my phone. And I get rid of Instagram from time to time just to offload whatever, you know. It's really not so much drama on Facebook, but it just, you know, people's just like mine, like shitty stories trying to get followers. But
yeah, I don't care what you ate for lunch.
Okay. So I mean,
not you personally.
Well, everyone should care what I had for lunch, but
I do.
Thank you. However, I like fully aware of what has been going on the last week, in terms of abortion, and just, I had an email pop up that said, you know, so-and-so made a Facebook post or something, and I was tagged in it. So I'm like, all right, so I'll view this from my email. Viewed the post and then backed out of it, and my Facebook feed popped up. And what a absolute dumpster fire of just utter, just, and everyone's opinion is valid, but just the back, like, it is like the last time I logged into Facebook, it's just the social fabric, communication, and structure of society imploded on one news feed in the most spectacular dumpster fire fashion. I mean, people...
Oh, yeah. Don't forget about what we missed apparently 6 months ago from me not being on Facebook.
What was
Jesus.
anyway.
You just think about the press release we did. Let's continue.
A
lot's happened since we've been away.
And look, it isn't that people's opinions for or against abortion are dumpster fire opinions. That's not the point, because
that's not the issue.
You're either, you know, for autonomy or you're against. Well, that's not the nice way to put it. But you either
want to kill babies or you don't.
Exactly. So, And I was just, I was.
You're not discounting anybody's opinion. I feel you.
Yeah. And it certainly wasn't that. It was more or less the sort of.
The way it comes out.
Yeah, it was the, it becomes alarming to me how, I guess, the civil discord breaks down between, I mean, the, like, from the creation of this in the early 2000s to today. It's just that, you know, there's people that love each other, just have the most diabolical, outrageous conversations with one another. And it,
let me ask you this. How many replies on that thread did it take for the dialogue to descend into just utter, just wicked chaos?
Well, here's the thing that I found, I think, the most...
I mean, you followed the thread, I'm assuming, a little bit.
Well, but here's the thing, though. That it wasn't even one. It was one after another. So within each one of those was an assortment of, like, the thread, right?
Oh, so its own little universe.
It wasn't just one.
It's only private Idaho.
So, you know, and what I found that the most interesting about it, and rightfully so, was I think the caliber of individuals that were engaged in the conversation. So it just, to me, it illuminated how these decisions that have been made in places like Alabama, how it really seems to impact everyone. And again, what it isn't the opinions, it's how quickly people who are really friends and value each other's opinions just sort of break down. And that's why I think having these discussions, like person to person, even if it's just over Skype, you and I, like at least just talking about it, it gets through the, I mean, you know, email etiquette, right? Exclamation points, periods, everything may seem a little different. You could take things out of context, but it was just one after another. And it just goes to show.
Okay, who thinks that this law framed the way it was is a good idea?
Well, even what's the Christian news outlet, 711 or whatever it's called, I guess.
I thought it was Fox News.
No, it's the Christian whatever.
I don't know.
Pat Robinson or whatever his name is. I mean,
Pat Robinson.
Allegedly, he said it
went
too far.
He's still alive?
He is, yeah. I think, right? I mean, anyway.
For him.
So the other point here is it seemed like, and as I'm, because I'm trying to figure out that it's, to me, it's more, it seemed as though people were talking through one another, like completely missing the point of what the other one was saying. And the problem with this type of discussion is that you can very well see, just look past each other, because you are so sure of your viewpoint and the other person's so sure, so that you might even be missing the nuances of the point that the person's trying to make. And I get it. I'm trying to figure out, because I feel like actually having some sort of meaningful dialogue actually allows me to get into the mind of the person, as opposed to it just being the sanctity of the unborn.
Oh, that can be very dangerous to do.
Yeah, it's certainly not easy. But anyway, I mean, that's where people hate centrists, because it's like, oh, you're trying to get into the mind of someone here, and like, who cares? Have a backbone. And, you know, and everyone can go back to episode number one, the inaugural. I don't know why we picked abortion as the first topic. Probably because we just decided to dive into it. But I'll be honest.
As I recall, we had a little bit of an in-room influence.
Possibly.
If you remember, we might have had a bit of a Serbian influence.
Maybe. There's potential there.
Remember y'all ganged up on me on the Second Amendment, but that's for another story.
Yeah, sure. And look, at the end of the day, my views from that first ever podcast episode we did still hold true. And what's funny, it's not funny, but what's interesting and of note is that the view for and I'll set some caveats to this entire thing. Being pro-choice doesn't mean you're pro-abortion. That just because you feel like women should have autonomy doesn't mean that you're for killing babies. There's a difference. I still believe and contend to this day that abortion, for the majority, 99% of all women, is something that is one of the hardest things that they have to do. And the second being, you know, my views and just pulling back from 189 episodes ago, and it was very different from someone else's view that, especially some of the females in my life, that, you know, it's more of an autonomy issue, where for me, the issue isn't as much the autonomy, because that's not my lived experience. But my lived experience is that, and not you, I'm not lumping you into this. This is a huge generalization, because I know you personally and your views, that a lot of these same people who, have social conservative platforms are the same people that support someone like Donald Trump taking away Medicare, Medicaid, CHIP, WIC,
et cetera. By the way, the president has even expressed concern about this.
Yes. Yes. So, and I'm just setting some guidelines as to the perception of where I'm coming from, my perspective, that, you know, my autonomy is important, but I don't live that experience. However, my experience is that, look, a lot of the same people who are pushing for, the pro-life platform are the same people that support a government that takes away women, infant, and children funding and CHIP funding, et cetera. So there's a inherent hypocrisy for whatever reason in my mind to that. So
right. That's, your view is that on the one hand, being pro-choice is not pro-abortion, but on the other hand, being pro-life is really pro-birth.
Is pro-birth, exactly. And so I've always framed it as pro-birth.
I just want to make sure
So, for example, before we move on with the sort of semantics of this entire thing, or the actual reality of the bill. So for example, I couldn't help it. There was a physician, actually an intensive care physician, that posted something on Facebook that said, it makes me sick that the media and all these folks are just overlooking the sanctity of life of the unborn. And she said some other things, and I couldn't help it. And I just replied back, and I look, all due respect, I think the problem for a lot of people lies in exactly what you just said, is the sanctity of the life of the unborn. Everyone, I think the 99.9% of all those people who get an abortion have thought about that life. What I meant and what I said was, that's the problem. At least the problem for me is that a lot of people who are concerned about the sanctity of the life of the unborn child then stop caring about the life of the born child. And I cited several things a lot of conservatives who are for defunding welfare platforms. So it's like, so we're going to give that child the full potential, that fetus rather, the full potential to life. But then essentially not allow it to have the full potential, after, given the environment that it was brought into, that the mother maybe did not want to bring it into.
Is any environment on this sphere blasting its way through space right now, is any environment a good one for any of us to walk in? I mean, I don't.
Well, I'll say this.
This is a bit dark. I just don't know how much those fetuses are missing.
That's a good question. I would contend, and this is from anecdotal experience, people I've talked to, and being in healthcare, you talk to a lot of people.
Your good friend Joe.
Good friend Joe.
You know, the president says stuff like that. Oh, but yeah. My friend Joe.
Yeah, my good, yeah, Bob. You know, those decisions were made because, and I think we have to acknowledge, or at least the other side needs to acknowledge, that and this is not a mistake in terms of like the morality of the woman, but there was an unintended pregnancy. This was not supposed to happen. It was a mistake, right? And we all make mistakes. And it's funny to me that the religious groups that really are proponents or pro-birth proponents sort of, when someone's acknowledging a mistake and realizes that they absolutely like their potential, the potential of the child, the potential child rather, the potential all around to generate more productivity to society, when the woman does the cost benefit analysis of that and realizes that it's an overbearing burden, that they make the decision to terminate early. And it's a mistake, and it's something that that person will have to live with. And I don't know, you know, that when the side that's so ardently perpetuating the pro-birth narrative is not willing to help overcome that mistake and give the best potential for that person, you know, I find that hard to swallow. I find that a bitter pill to swallow. It's a weird narrative. And I realize that, and my thing is, I think that it becomes so short-sighted or like narrow focus. The blinders are on, that all we're thinking about is that life, that potential life rather. It's not even, I mean, it's, we're talking about viability here, but the blinders are so focused on the potential for that life and bringing it to term. We're so focused on that. And then it's sort of lost.
But we're not focused on the potential of the actual life. No, I get it. I mean, I resent it being called a fetus, but we won't get into semantics there, because that is a scientific term. But first of all, I'd like to postulate that if a pill, among other things, had been swallowed, we wouldn't be talking about abortion. Mm-hmm. But I'm also someone that believes that, hey, if we were talking about a situation where, hey, look, yes, it's legal for you to abort this child. However, we also had this, you know, I'm just throwing this out here. I get it's a private entity, folks. But this is a hypothetical. The Catholic Church has this organization where, look, you are going to be taken care of throughout this unwanted pregnancy. You're not going to have to worry about a thing. And then if you so choose upon delivery, fine. We're going to place that child in adoption. If not, we're going to help you recover, get you a decent job placement. You're going to have aftercare for if you want to go to school. And we look back at the 40 plus million odd taxpayers that we've deleted via abortion since Roe v. Wade. That'd be a different circumstance if we had that sort of framework in society, that sort of infrastructure in place to deal with this. But I feel what you're saying, because it's what gives libertarians and other hardcore social conservatives, well, they would call themselves social liberals, but when you get down to the spending, their fiscal politics become their social politics. I mean, or do I exaggerate?
No, yeah. I think so
if that was the scenario, I think we'd be having a different conversation.
And I do agree with you. And here's the other part of, you know, and I think there's a lot that we agree with here, that regardless of whether or not the life is brought to term, that's where we disagree. But what I mean by blinders, right, is that that institution is just not as strong as it used to be. And that actually worked really well, I think, when women weren't as a huge fixture to the workforce and to our overall GDP, where they're
hold on, that doesn't exist at all anymore.
Well, it doesn't.
Okay, the Catholic Church does, but yes. Like, I mean, all you need to do to know things have changed, listen to the Village People song YMCA. Yeah, it's a goofy club anthem, sports rock and all that. I get it. But the part about a young man getting clean is not talking about a shower.
Yeah.
You going on your way, helping you on your way. You can pay $100 and get a gym membership at the YMCA now, but those social programs are gone. The church has let the people down. That's why the government has had to perform the role it's in.
So to me, there's a couple things here that I want you to help me through. And, you know,
I don't know if I can.
Well, no, because I think there's a huge push on at least the social conservative side that the church play a more active role. And so the one piece I wanted to get in there before we talk about that, I think, is that this is what's endemic about the problem of the blinders. Okay. Because let's pretend, for example, you know, you brought up the point of 40 million taxpayers. Well, the reality is that
I didn't mean that to sound so cold.
No, you're not. Because at the end of the day, like, you know what? The government quantifies just about everything. So you're allowed to have debates and quantify things. But the reality I would ask is how many of those 40 million children would be taxpaying citizens? I mean, we're talking about, if we were to look at demographics, and to be honest with you, married women get abortions, single women get abortions, like it runs the gamut.
Well, they wouldn't all be.
No, but a huge number, and I don't have statistics to actually cite, but
a fair bet to say that it's been a net fiscal loss.
Sure, but the next question I ask is if a driving factor for abortions is because there is no fiscal support, right? So there's no way to pay for this. There's no way. So right now we're paying.
Precisely my point.
Right now we're paying for maybe one woman, maybe some welfare or something like that. But now we're going to pay for two. So that person is not even a taxpayer. That person's essentially just someone we're paying out more welfare. So
my question to the Christian right would be, you got to pick a side and die for it here. Or my statement to them would be, pick one.
It's sort of, I guess my thing is, it's like you can't have your cake and eat it too.
Exactly. This is a Joshua moment, to borrow from the Old Testament, where you say, choose you this day whom you shall serve. Okay, I hearken back to Stephen Colbert, who I'm paraphrasing here, but he put it really best to me. He's Catholic, but he said, look, America needs to look itself in the mirror and say one of two things. Either A, Jesus Christ was a total lunatic, that we don't believe a thing he had to say. Or the inverse of that, and I know I'm butchering this, is we don't really care what he had to say. Because he said, if you love me, feed my sheep. It was very simple. And he also went on in the New Testament to say, there will be people that approach me to enter the kingdom of heaven who have cast out demons and performed miracles in my name, and I will say, depart from me, I knew you not. Now, this is not a religious podcast, but I'm speaking to those individuals specifically here.
Yeah.
That need to take a good, long, hard look in the mirror and say, okay, is this a bullet point?
Yeah.
For you to read off and backslap each other walking down the steps of church?
Yeah. And look, here's the other part of this, too, is...
I didn't mean to get all religious on you there,
but
folks need to think about that.
I mean, the bottom line is this is 50% a religious argument. I mean, that's it. So you can't
get around it.
Can't get around it. Exactly. So, you know, there's just a couple of reality. And again, I think this is the healthy spot for us to be in this conversation, is talking about a lot of the political, social ramifications of this, because quite frankly, I'm not a woman and I'm not here to talk about what it is like to not have, you know, autonomy. And we could talk about that maybe at a different podcast episode, but you know, I think what's just bothered me more based on my experience and my perception is just the political and social blinders that we put on, and we don't, when we have got another side that's just absolutely not discussing or doesn't want to have the conversation. So there's another thing that I find interesting about this is sort of the herd mentality. And if anyone knows the herd mentality, or, you know, the chaos theory, that, you know, a group of people will do things that one individual would never do. And so it's sort of that thing. I've had conversations with ardent pro-birth individuals, and just to be clear, they don't like that, but it's actually spurred a lot of really interesting conversation. And I said, you know, there's some Catholic folks and other evangelical practicing individuals I've talked to, and always had brought that up about being pro-birth, and it's always threw them off guard. And I said, well, and then you kind of put your argument out, and it's like, okay, I see where you're coming from. But what is interesting to me is, on an individual level, there's a lot of, oh yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. I think we need, the church needs to do more, or, you know, we need to be more charitable, or yeah, those are really things we probably should look at. But then it just, in the herd mentality or the chaos theory, where a lot of people tend to do things different from whether they would be just an individual pressed about these things, sort of just completely put the blinders on, and it's just not part of the argument at all. And I think that's what really bothers a lot of liberal and democratic folks, left-leaning folks, you know, that really get chastised for their views or their heathen type views, where it's like, look, I have to take the side. I have to take
Let's be clear here. Let's be clear here. They're godless freaks, the ones that care more about the whales than they do the life of a child. Because the fact is, you shoot a pregnant woman in California, you and both die, you're going to prison for double murder. So that's bullshit. On the other hand, that's what I was getting to earlier when I was referring to the whole back slapping, walking down front steps of the church. Oh, yeah, we really talked about something today. Okay, both sides are bullshit.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
look.
Just so we're clear, I'm equally nauseated with the left on this because I'm sorry. That dog that you want me to feel sorry for in the commercial, shivering in the cold, I feel sorry for that animal, but it has no soul. That is not a child.
Yeah. And look,
I know I sound like a jerk right now, but
there is, and I understand that there are, and I will say there's equally radical views on each side. I think if just the idea of either being pro-birth, pro-life, or pro-choice is a pretty standard position to take on the barricade, but you know, radically on either side, I think is a bit bonkers, but. You know, I think for someone like me, if you were to just drop me on planet Earth, and I think about this all the time, if you were to just drop me on in America and I had no context and someone were to just present this argument to me or present this cultural phenomenon that we're in right now, I would be hard pressed to take the pro-birth, pro-life position only because and autonomy would be one of them, but I don't know that it would fit into my initial complaint, but it would be that, well, wait a second, the side that wants the baby to be here also doesn't want to support them necessarily the same way that the other side would like to support them. Like, they're either giving the mother an out or they want to support that, like, they want to support them. So, like, for example, where do you see low abortion rates? Scandinavia. Where do you see a high population of successful single mothers? Scandinavia. I mean, it's like, it's a case study, guys. It's have your cake and eat it too. But the means of how you have successful single mothers doesn't bode well with the side that wants a lot of single mothers. So it is a bit baffling to me, and that's, I've had a really hard time.
That was a baffling juxtaposition of statements.
Yes.
I'm going to say.
I went from one statement of being dropped in America to a case study.
And yes, I followed that. You might need to write a page or two op-ed yourself.
Oh, I have. I have done this already. Right there. But anyway, I think that's my point. If you saw America and you just dropped me on planet Earth and put me in America, I would be amazingly confused.
I would be terrified.
Yes, but if you dropped me in Scandinavia and said, "Oh look, well there's liberal abortion policies here."
That's not what I would say.
There's liberal abortion policies here, yet people aren't getting them at quite the same frequency. Gosh,
that's an hourglass with blonde hair and blue eyes.
So anyway,
we were talking about autonomy, weren't we?
Yeah. Well, there is the autonomy piece, which is just cut and dry. It's either you have it or you don't. But anyway, we're at a half hour and I've been rambling, but I did want to propose, and most people know this already, but I wanted to get your views on this real quick because I think you had a really interesting viewpoint on this. Obviously it is not, it is not unobvious, I think, to even the layman that the intent here is to get this to the Supreme Court. And the more draconian measures of abortion in the even no abortion in the case of rape or incest, or physicians who practice and give abortions have lifetime in prison, that, and even to the point where, you know, if you can't prove that your miscarriage was natural, you could be imprisoned for that. And by the way, I think it's like 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 women have miscarriages. So that's crazy slippery slope. But anyway, the point isn't to necessarily have this in Alabama. The point is to create such draconian abortion, anti-abortion law that it will be challenged by the Supreme Court. And that's the point of this. And the more these states can pile up these sort of draconian right to life or abortion legislation, that they can get it there. And the idea and the intent is that with a packed conservative Supreme Court, that they will overturn Roe v. Wade, and abortion will no longer be legal. There will no longer be a legal right to abortion in the United States. Now,
it's not pragmatic for one thing.
Yeah, so this is where I would like you to go ahead and discuss how you felt, because I felt like you were very articulate in maybe calming my potential fear of this being overturned.
Well, I think this will be a bit of a bomb for a number of folks left of center on this, and it should be. I mean, first of all, the pragmatism of overturning Roe versus Wade and saying there's going to be a total abortion ban in this country. It's not there, all right? That's for one thing. But beyond that, I express this view to you. I haven't seen it. Now, in all fairness, I haven't been scouring the mainstream media. I haven't seen this argument made anywhere. But I think there's a strong case that this clearly is in violation. The Alabama law is in clear violation of the Commerce Clause, because to say you could jail a woman or a let's say you jail a woman who goes to Florida to get an abortion, or you jail a doctor in Alabama who performs an abortion on a woman from Florida, however that works, okay, either or. It's the same thing as saying you could jail someone who goes to California, they buy an ounce of pot, and they smoke it all over whatever time frame before they come back. But when they get there, you're gonna arrest them, okay? Well, the Commerce Clause gives the federal government the right to regulate interstate commerce, hence the name. Hmm. And the reason it was first proposed was to prevent, say, California and Alabama from dragging each other into one of those courts. And it's due to sovereign immunity, same section of the law that makes suing a state government or the federal government very, very difficult to pull off. And I'm not a lawyer, okay, but that was the first thing that came to mind going, because you've read the subtext of the law. Mm-hmm. Correct, that the doctors could potentially be jailed, and obviously any patient seeking that could be jailed, meaning someone from out of state. Well, that's obviously an issue. What if there's a doctor who lives in the southeast ridge of Tennessee who works across the border? Well, so you see what I'm getting at there?
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's, and a lot of articles have really pushed a lot of these really interesting questions that would happen in terms of, beyond that in the Commerce Clause, but okay, if a fetus is, or an unborn child is, has full rights, then what's, you know, the funniest one I saw was, so if a mother commits a crime and then is imprisoned, then technically the fetus or the child, unborn child inside the mother, has not had due process, and therefore, do we actually imprison that mother?
There's another facet to this. the other facet of this is specifically the part where doctors can be punished. And this, again, is my view. I haven't seen this. If you find it in a mainstream outlet, please share it. But doctors take an oath called the Hippocratic Oath, where they say they promise to do no harm, which implies in spirit that doing no harm means allowing no harm. Yes. So, again, I'm not a lawyer, but by forcing them to be in a situation where they would allow harm to their patient, I'm not saying that every abortion is to prevent harm to the woman, but in those circumstances where it is, again, you're forcing physicians possibly to violate the Hippocratic Oath. I mean, this poses to me a series of existential threats, from the Commerce Clause down to the Hippocratic Oath to also the pragmatism. This is not the hill for the anti-Roe v. Wade folks to die on, okay? And I don't see, we've seen several times where the conservative justices that President Trump has appointed, Neil Gorsuch siding with the left when it came to the Fourth Amendment, and Brett Kavanaugh, I don't remember the issue that I sent you via text, but it's happened.
It just recently happened. Yeah.
Right. It was recently. I just am not seeing this one as especially in tune as they clearly are into the political atmosphere. I'm just not seeing this being the hill they die on.
Well, I think that was the kind of last point that I wanted to get to. And I'm sure we'll revisit this entire conversation again as it will continue. Important.
I'm pretty confident this is going to go all the way up.
But my question then is, what's your prediction at the Supreme Court? Because the thing that bothers and or excites both the right or the left is that, let's just take Kavanaugh, for example, has Catholic past. But at the end of the day,
So does Neil Gorsuch.
Yeah, exactly. A good justice, a good practitioner of the law, a judge, is someone that cannot bring their own bias, They cannot bring their own belief into judgment. That it is,
I'm Catholic and I would vote to overturn this law.
So that cannot happen, or should not happen, and should be that the justice is blind should most definitely be perpetuated by the most important justices in the United States, arguably the world.
Likely choice, I believe, is they're going to kick it down and pray that the Ninth Circuit will pick it up. That's probably not possible, but my opinion is most likely they're going to do anything and everything they can not to hear it. Mm-hmm. If they do, they're going to strike it down.
Yeah, I really, obviously, you know, if it does get to that point, it'll be a moment of reckoning in the United States in terms of, you know, majority versus minority opinion, cultural opinion, etc. I just have a hard time believing.
There's no way. Because then that becomes de facto national law. Mm-hmm.
The second thing that I think has been, you know, this is not really necessarily Roe v. Wade, but things that folks have been looking at on the Supreme Court is how the Supreme Court has currently been handling precedent. And there's been a couple cases recently where it's like, wow, they just completely went against precedent. And that maybe would set an interesting standard for the precedent of Roe v. Wade, where there really isn't.
Well, yeah.
But again.
But that's my thing about saying, is this the hill for them to die on? And that's the reason, I mean, I could be wrong. The reason I would be completely shocked, and as somebody speaking here, as I texted you the other day, was not shocked for Trump's win. Okay. This would shock me because of the legal minds and the bench going, as poorly crafted as this law is, you can't tell me they haven't had the opportunity to pick up and hear another abortion case, Nate.
Yeah.
This is the one they're going to hear.
Yeah.
That's
a good point, right? So what Alabama's doing is it's essentially giving Alabama, let's say Missouri, Tennessee, they're all giving the Supreme Court a case to look at, right? So it's almost as if the anti-abortion league, if you will, or lawyers will pick up the best one to take up to the Supreme Court.
Right. Now, is the Alabama law the hill they're going to die on?
So you got to think, if the Alabama one goes to the Supreme Court, they now have a bill that says under no circumstance, except for the life of the mother,
basically ectopic pregnancy,
essentially, I think in Ohio the law was that you had to transplant the ectopic pregnancy into the uterus, which is insane, but the Alabama law that says
not reasonably possible.
Yeah, exactly. The Alabama law that says that
we're gonna imprison doctors.
Yeah, if you're raped, or if your brother impregnates you in incest, or a physician going away to prison for a lifetime, that's going to be the one that overturns Roe v. Wade. And you got to ask yourself, do you think even Brett Kavanaugh wants that attached to his legacy?
No.
Nope.
No, no, no. I don't know that Clarence Thomas wants that attached to his legacy.
Well, do you think
we're talking about a majority Catholic court here.
Do you think Scalia would want that attached to his legacy?
No, I don't think so. I don't think Rehnquist would want this attached to his legacy.
No.
I think the court's going to do everything in their power not to hear the Alabama law. If it does, it's a loser. If you are pro overturning, if you're in favor of overturning Roe v. Wade, you don't want it to be this one.
No. You want it, I mean,
Ohio.
Or Ohio. Yeah, we'll see what Missouri comes up with. We'll see what
every time.
Anyway, hey, look, we're at 40 minutes.
It's like an abortion, you know?
Anyway, we're at 40 minutes, and I think this is a good setting as we watch this one sort of unfold in the cultural response to this. I obviously come to this conversation with my perspective, and I'm not discounting A, the opinions of other people, or the experiences that people have had, or the charity that even pro-birth or pro-life individuals extend to mothers who have their babies and adopt out. There are there are a lot of charitable people out there, and so I'm not talking bad about all religious people. I'm certainly not. And so I did want to extend that caveat at the end of this. So, as always, my friend, it is an honor and privilege to do this with you, even in these type of conversations that we do just kind of mutually agree to disagree, I suppose. But then can always find a little bit of common ground, probably more common ground than anything.
There is. I mean, next time I'll have to go on. I didn't mean to quite infer that all people left of center in this issue are godless freaks. I meant the loudest ones to save the whales, folks. But, you know, 5 more minutes and we turn into a pumpkin, so.
Yeah, very true. So, all right, my friend. Well, until next time.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.